Hello and welcome to Mensplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner. Are men badly socialized for failure? What is failure? Do we define failure correctly? And how do we as men, in a manly way, accept failure and move on? These are the questions we'll be tackling today. Our panel, Hafiz Noorani, our producer from Vancouver. Hello, Hafiz.
Hello. How are you?
Good to have you. From Ottawa, Oliver George, host of Just Chill with Oliver George podcast. Hello, Oliver.
Hello.
Good to have you. From, I forget where Chris is, but wherever Chris Hamilton is, he's with us now. Hello, Chris Hamilton, MC Illtones.
You can just say Vancouver Island. I'm all over the place. So yeah, Vancouver Island. What's up, Stephen?
Good to have you. And of course, our legal eagle is Paul Doroshenko. Hello, Paul.
Hi, everybody.
Good to have you. And our pig sticker, the gentleman who lives on a hobby farm outside of Edmonton with his wife, David Lisney. Hello, David.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me again.
Good to have you. Okay, so we need to talk today about failure because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in culture now that leads towards the idea that masculinity and failure seem to have a problem with each other. And there are a lot of social indicators which indicate that hypermasculinity is marked by an inability to accept failure. You know, second place is the first loser, all of these things. And I think that we've talked in previous shows about how suicide rates are very high for men. And I think that part of it we've discussed is the unwillingness, the lack of comfort in reaching out for help, but also in the ability to metabolize failure and to understand failure. And I wonder whether as a society, we do understand what failure is. I think maybe we should start there. I'll start with you, Hafiz. To you, what is failure?
To me, I would say, look, there's the sports failure and then there's being a failure or a loser or something. I think that's how I devise it. Are we talking failure in the sense of like, you know, the classic going into battle and losing and that you're a failure? Or did you just fail at trying to accomplish a goal? Because to me, failure has always been a learning mechanism. Everything that I've tried that I thought might be successful but wasn't, I learned a lesson there on why it was successful. And it has given me a sort of key to the next thing. To help me a little bit more successful at that. So that's how I see failure.
Okay. How about you, David Lisney? How do you see failure? What is failure to you?
Failure is just not achieving whatever you were trying to. That's about it. What you do with it is the important thing. If it's in sports, your goal was in order to make the most points. In life, if you've got a career relationship, it's not achieving that career relationship. So, I mean, what failure is just not achieving your goal. But I think the really important thing is learning from learning a lesson from every failure, because then it becomes something you can grow from.
Okay. Paul, how about you? What's failure in your definition?
Well, there's lots of things that you could look at. You could say like failure at a task or a goal, failure in a business venture, failure in a marriage, or a relationship, failing in a class or something like that. For me, of course, I go to court and I'm dealing with matters in court, and you succeed in them and you fail in them. And, you know, you have to learn to deal with the fact that you're not always going to succeed. It's not always right that you failed, but, you know, so long as you can look at yourself in the mirror and say that you did the job that needed to be done, I suppose. But there's all sorts of different types of failures. I mean, 90% of the things that we do each day, we succeed in. And then when we fail in something, you know, we usually beat ourselves up quite a bit. At least that's my experience.
How about you, Oliver? What's your definition of failure?
Well, I mean, I don't think failure actually becomes a thing until you've truly given up. As long as you, to echo what everyone else is saying here, as long as you keep getting back on the horse, then it can actually be a real positive turnaround in the long run. You just have to be patient and persistent. For me, especially, I think the obvious parallel, like these guys have mentioned, is sports. It's sort of the masculine competition thing that we're all thinking of, but I sucked at sports my whole life. So I guess I never really had to, or I got over that at a young age. I got very used to failing in that respect. And honestly, most of the moments in my life that have evolved me as a person have come from failure, whether it's divorce or other things along those lines, you know? So I think unless you give up, you haven't truly failed.
Yeah, interesting point. Now, do we feel that there is a societal messaging towards men that if you do not succeed, you are a failure, as opposed to, you know, because you can you lose without being a failure? I think what everyone's saying so far is, yeah, absolutely. Because in every contest, there's a winner and there's a loser. But losing something doesn't make you writ large a loser. But are there messages to men that tell us never surrender, never admit failure, never admit defeat? Is there a problem that men have in, because the messaging is that real men win, is there a problem that we create as men in being able to handle failure and turn something positive out of it? What do you think, David?
Yeah, that's a good angle about it, because like everyone's been saying, you only actually fail at something if you give up. I think it's closer to the societal pressure in order to not be a loser that failure becomes difficult to accept and grow from and overcome. But also, I think everybody kind of touched on it, that over time, you have to realize that you have to keep on trying. Like, whatever, if it's something worthwhile enough for you in order to try the first time, it's worthwhile trying the second time, and keep on trying until you achieve what it is. In of itself, that first failure or second failure or whatever number of failures it takes in order to get to the end result, those failures don't make you a loser. Once you've given up, that makes it an actual failure, and that then if you're constantly not giving yourself the opportunity in order to grow and the opportunity in order to try again and learn and get better, then maybe loser would be appropriate. But until that happens, it's all a learning process.
Okay. What about you, Oliver? Do you think that men in particular have a problem with admitting loss, admitting losing?
I think that's a stereotype that's been pushed on men, but I think it's becoming archaic in 2020. And I think a lot of this has to do with what you consider success too, which can be a very personal thing from person to person. You know, some people think they have to have the penthouse apartment, and other people just want to live a life that feels fulfilling to them. So we definitely have to touch on personal success and where that falls for each and every individual.
Okay, so you think that it's an archaic stereotype that is
idea that men can't fail. I mean, the other point I would say is sometimes it's okay to just fail at something and be okay with that. Like if someone got me to come out and play badminton and I sucked ass at it, I don't really care. You know, I'm okay with that failure and not pursuing it further. So it's really like, that was just a weird example, I guess. But
no, was a very, I think you're fine. Example. I don't think any one of us here would care to be that big a badminton champion.
But that's just it, right? It's okay to fail at some things, but it's going to be on a person to person basis, whether or not you give a shit.
Do you think there's a cultural thing in that though? Like, you know,
about badminton
culture. Well, maybe. But like something as simple as like a sport like badminton, if you suck at it, no one cares. But like, you know, growing up as a kid in Canada and playing hockey, if you're not as good, you're kind of got this like ranking, right?
Where somewhere there's a cutthroat competitive badminton league, and we just don't know about it.
Taiwan.
They play with razor sharp badminton birdies.
Yeah. Shuttlecock.
Shuttlecock.
Yeah. Shuttlecock. Shuttlecock. I always thought that was an astronaut illness. Chris Hamilton, is there a male stigma against accepting loss?
There is, absolutely. I totally disagree with the old anecdote of never give up. Sometimes it is time to give up. And I mean, the only failure is not learning from experience, right? So obviously, if you're you know, we're going to sports all the time, so I'll continue along that trajectory. If you're in a hockey game and you're down by 3 goals and it's going into the third period, you shouldn't just give up. But if you're 45 and still trying to make it into the NHL, maybe you should. And yeah, like there, without failure on a, at least a small scale, there wouldn't be like human invention, or, you know, there wouldn't be anything. There wouldn't be business ventures because nobody just got it right the first time. Coming from the entertainment industry, which a lot of us are, you know, in it, in, involved in it in some way. Not every show that I did was a major success. I didn't go out to, you know, Ottawa the first time and pack the place with 50 people. My first show in Ottawa, coming out from the West Coast, had two people at it. Well, that show may have been a failure, but learning maybe not to work with that promoter and not to rock at that nightclub or not to pair myself with that artist or whatever wasn't a failure. It was a learning experience. And so I could tailor the next tour based on the information that I had learned on the first round.
But is there something masculine about never giving up, and even when it's clear that you've failed, continuing? Like, just, is there something, is there some stigma, is there some emotional dissonance with regards to men giving up?
I think that goes back thousands of years.
The stigma definitely exists, for sure. It's just, I don't necessarily agree with it. I think that there are some cases where, you know, it's maybe seeming manly, trying to take a crack at that NHL career at age 45 isn't going to, you know, serve me anything.
Okay. Oliver, you were saying.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, I think it goes back thousands of years, and it's probably rooted in combat and war at a time when if you failed, you died, or you failed to protect the ones you love. So that's why, I mean, unless we're in war times, it's somewhat irrelevant to keep that mentality, at least as a tried and true way to live your life. But back at a different time period, it may have been the only way to live your life.
But the
I
fact
just think
is,
of like,
yes, yes, go ahead.
Men engaged in things like duels. Right. Mm-hmm. That's like sort of the ultimate. I'm so offended by whatever, you know, your accusation is. I'm going to take a risk with a pistol or a, you know, two swords and go to combat over some little minor dispute. I mean, so many men historically have been so easily offended by small things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like being told to fuck off. Someone has been shot in the head for that. Through, yeah. With a dueling pistol, like there was a generation.
You've offended me, sir.
Specifically,
I challenge you to a duel at dawn.
Specifically, like, white men from the European origin that were so easily offended by their honor that they walk 10 paces and shoot each other.
People who, like, should be smart enough to have figured it out that this,
like,
is stupid.
Alexander Hamilton died because of that. Like that is someone that was that close to the presidency, and you know, a dueling pistol.
Well, speaking of the presidency, you got a guy who's failed miserably, and he can't give it up, right?
Maybe it's an American thing. Maybe it's an American thing. Maybe
I don't think it's just American. I think that men have a problem. I mean, business failures are crushing for men. Yeah. They're very few people just walk away unscathed and say, "Well, I'll go get a job somewhere," or "I'll try something in another location." You know, business failures are crushing emotionally for men, because it's not just a repudiation of their business, it's a repudiation of them as men. And we can't deny that that is a reality, and it's still a reality, that men are so associated with what they do. Men are what they do, that when what they do isn't successful, it is the emotional toll. It can be absolutely crippling. And I think that is related to the inability to properly recognize what is a setback and what is failure. Failure is often a mindset. It depends, you know, I think often we don't play the long game. We play the short game. And in the short game, this particular venture didn't work out. Well, that may lead us to working in something that we're better at, or creating a business that is more successful based on the ashes and the lessons of the previous one. That's long game thinking, but it's very difficult at the time to think long game when everything's come crashing down around you. And you feel like, even if you're not married, you feel like you're just not a good provider. There's still, as much as we want to claim that we are enlightened and we are progressive and have moved away from that, we haven't. There's still a value judgment placed upon men who can't seem to you know, make a good living and be good providers, whether for their families or for themselves alone. So there is still issue and stigma associated specifically. I mean, women, I'm sure women have problems with failure. There's no question failure is a human thing, but it's less about who they are than it is with men. With men, it's they've failed as their existence has failed, as opposed to their venture has failed. And it's difficult for men to accept that and see it as being, you know, a step that may lead them in the right direction. It's difficult at the time that you're dealing with that, whether it's a business failure, a failure of a marriage, a relationship, these things.
Failure to get a boner.
Failure, yeah, failure to, you know, we can laugh about it, but.
No, that's very true. I meant that legitimately, yeah.
Yeah, everyone's going to go down that path.
Yeah, erectile dysfunction is another thing because, you know, men are their penises in so many ways. And
well, yeah, I didn't even mean ED. I meant like, what about a time where you can't get hard because your heart's really not in it and you really don't dig said person, and yet society would say, oh, just fuck her. You got to fuck her. You're a man. And I hate that mentality.
That's a different show.
Yeah, that's a different show.
I was just thinking.
I can't wait for that show. make you hard.
When I was my first real girlfriend, serious girlfriend dumped me, I was crushed and I spent a year basically drunk. Before I got my shit together and turned my life around.
How old
and
were you?
In the end, I realized at the time that I could use this either just to become an idiot, or I could use it to reinvent myself. And I've reinvented myself several times after I've failed. And then I realized, you know what? I don't even have to fail in order to reinvent myself every once in a while.
Whose phone keeps going off, by the way?
Sorry, no, my phone. Sorry,
anyway, damn phone, Hafiz.
I did.
It's like the fourth time now something has come up.
My phone, I actually nudged it and it started TikTok.
Put it out of your reach. Sorry,
the
Paul.
The humiliation of getting dumped was probably one of the more crushing things I'll have to experience in my life. Now, I've been dumped since, and I can tell you it gets easier each time just because of the wisdom that you gain from it. But I mean, dealing with it, like mentally dealing with it, and then watching other men go through the same thing, particularly longer relationships that you were committed to, is crushing, and it's very hard, and it's hard on your sense of self.
How old were you, that first girlfriend that left you drunk for almost a year?
19.
Okay, so part of the factor there is not having enough life experience to recognize the difference between trial and tragedy. I mean, I think we've all been there. We've probably all been there at some point where we don't have enough life experience to recognize that this too shall pass because it does. Hell, I was in a relationship with somebody for a number of years and it was disastrous and I should have ended it so many times, but didn't want to call it quits, didn't want to determine that it was a failure. And finally, she determined that it was a failure and did me the favor of ending it. It was crushing at the time because I didn't want to accept that it was a failure because I had put so much time and energy into it. But I look back and I think, oh my God, thank God that thing ended. It should have ended. It should never have started. But at the time, it felt, as Paul said, it felt humiliating. It felt emasculating. And I think emasculating is probably the thing we're talking about here, is feelings of being emasculated by failures. I guess the question that I want to run around now is, how do you get up? First of all, how do you know when it's time to call it quits on something? Because we're told, keep at it, be that little ant moving the rubber tree plant, the little engine that could. How do you know when it's time to say, this isn't working? You don't have to determine yourself a failure, but how do you get past that idea of a real man pushes through and recognize, okay, it's time for this to end in as dignified a fashion as possible. Hafiz?
Sorry, I just muted myself thinking you were going to someone else first. In terms of when to decide when to quit, I think it really is different for each person. I think for me, there's been
jobs that I've left. And the reason I would leave something would be when I'd know that no matter what I'd put into it, the result would be the same. It was no longer in my control where this thing was going. And like it's sort of like a sinking ship. When once there's a lot of water in there, you kind of got to jump.
Okay. Oliver?
Well, like much like you said, I think sometimes somebody else has to bring it to light that it's time to quit. And that was the case in my marriage. I got married when I was only 23. And 5 years later, which was how long we lasted, we had two young kids. And I had this mentality that we can't break up. We can't break up a family. We can't do that to the children. And it was just so ingrained in me. And yet when we finally did break up and she finally pushed it to that breaking point, it turned out to be the biggest blessing in disguise. That's what propelled me into trying stand-up comedy, which was one thing I wanted to point out, that I think failure sometimes can become like an armor, because after my divorce, I just wasn't afraid of a lot, because I was like, you know, like what worse can happen at this point? You know, oh no, they don't laugh at my jokes. Like, who cares? My wife just left, you know, like, so I mean that like seriously though.
Yes. No.
And much in the same way, a few years after that, I got into this contest, which was some cannabis company out of Toronto. They were running this contest, and the winners, I believe they were going to have five winners, would get a free weed basically, just to do reviews for the company and stuff. So it seemed like a dream job for me. And I beat out about 25,000 other applicants to make it to the final 25. And when I finally lost in that, after all that, it was extra crushing. But that again was what propelled me to try to get back into comedy. I ended up hosting a show for Ed the Sock. And not long after, I started my podcast. So I really do think that failure can sometimes have a great turnaround.
Interesting. Yeah, good points. Good points. How about you, David?
Yeah, I think throwing in the towel and giving up on something that you're repeatedly failing on kind of boils down to what the perceived reward would be in accomplishing it versus not accomplishing it. Also, considering like a lot of people have talked about, like if you're in your 40s trying to join the NHL and being a key player there, you know, you have to have realistic goals and realistic endeavors that you're trying to go towards. And yes, take the risk, take the challenge, take something on that you're not comfortable with, but along the way, for one, prepare yourself for failure, because if it is something that's outside of your usual threshold, there's a good chance that you will fail. And also look for the signs where it's just not the right direction for you, because like a lot of people have kind of touched on already, just because you have setbacks, you have failures, a goal that you had in mind isn't achievable, you've tried everything, doesn't mean that another door won't open up, that another opportunity where it is more suited for you, and that you're able to use your failures, your shortcomings, your setbacks, that you're able to use all of that for potentially a greater goal and a greater achievement won't come along.
Good points. How about you, Paul? How do you realize it's okay to throw in the towel? This isn't going to work. And abandon all that societal thinking that says, just stay with it. You're just one step away. When do you realize, okay, it's time to call it?
That's always a tough one, and it really depends on the circumstance. I would say generally I'm more willing to fold the tent if I'm doing something in concert with somebody else, and it feels like I'm the only one who's really holding up my end of the bargain. So my dad warned me years ago, avoid going into business with other people, because you're going to end up doing all the work, or at least you're going to feel that way, and the other person's going to want the ride along. In those cases where I've done ventures like that, my dad's been right for the most part. Not always. There's sometimes I get, you know, involved with in a business venture with somebody who's as hardworking as me or harder, and then I'm, you know, feeling guilty about it. In those circumstances where, you know, it feels like I'm the only one putting in the effort, it's easier to walk away. When it comes to, you know, a relationship, when I was dumped that time, I had no clue that this was a good thing for me, like not a clue. And in the long run, it was the best thing ever for me because it provided me with some motivation to not be a loser, right? You know, I'm sitting there on my sofa on my seventh can of Ham's Light beer, thinking to myself, I got to either get my shit together or this is going to be the end of it. And it forced me to turn around, but I had no clue. Like, she was just fun and it was a party all the time with her, and I would have kept going as long as I could. Mm-hmm. So every circumstance is different. Every circumstance is different. And hopefully you're smart enough and you're, you know, resilient enough and you're capable of thinking about your situation without just, you know, external blame, that you can assess that, okay, this is where I've made the mistakes and this is what I've got to turn around. And if you're not capable of that, that's a sad thing. Okay. You know, good point. And I think there's lots of young men who probably are not capable of that. And they're just looking for blame all the time. You know, not everybody's going to end up being the corporate CEO. Not everybody's going to end up being, you know, super successful. You got to pick your strategy and your goal and stick with it. And as I've said before, you know, if you've got something good, then fuck the naysayers.
Okay. And how about you, Chris? When in your life have you been able to determine, or what markers have indicated, okay, this isn't going to go any further. I need to pull out.
Well, when I was in my mid-20s, I became like hell-bent on making it way, way further in the hip-hop industry. It was my main thing. I learned every facet of the industry. I was doing my own managing, my own booking. I produced my own beats. I wrote my own lyrics. I booked my own tours. I was my own travel agent, my accountant. I started getting grants through the Canadian government's Factor program, mm-hmm. as well. And at that point, I was doing so much work that it just became something I hated. I hated all of it. Every second of my day was work towards something that I had totally forgotten had started to have fun in the first place, and because I love the art form. And at that point, I did take a look at, just like David had said, I had to kind of weigh the pros and the cons. Like, what is the pro to continuing in this negative state of mind 100% of the time, opposed to cutting this out of my life completely and having the peace of mind that, you know, I tried, I can go do something else. You know, I'm only, you know, in my late 20s. So I ended up taking a break. I actually did make the decision to walk away from music entirely for about 6 years and have just recently been back at it. But to me, that was also a failure. So the way I was going about it to begin with being hell-bent on making it, quote unquote, making it, that was a failure because I was, you know, ceasing to enjoy any of the experience and the road to getting to the goal that I had accomplished. But also walking away from it entirely to me was a failure as well, because I didn't amend my goals. I didn't say, well, okay, I don't have to be the, you know, biggest international hip hop star ever, but I can exist at a local level in BC or in the Canadian hip hop scene and still have my foothold there. So to me, the way I dealt with it was also a failure. I was failing, you know, by not just amending my goals and making it something more realistic. So yeah, that was a situation where I definitely had to weigh the pros and the cons, because I certainly was unhappy with myself. And to me, that's true failure, is not being content in one's own life or in one's own skin.
Well, I wanted to say as an anecdote, I'm glad you came back to music, because I just recently listened to your music, and I think that you're exceptionally talented. So I'm glad you came back to it.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Now, final question. We've gone through accepting failure, accepting that failure can be good, accepting it can be one step in a longer journey, and learning to figure out when it's time to call it quits on something. The next question is, how do we pick ourselves up? What are ways to pick yourself up after something has not gone as well as you'd hoped it would? Paul? Oh, Paul's not there.
Hang on. Sorry. I was thinking this morning about a presentation I gave in university. I can't remember. It was like a short presentation, but a fourth year class. And the professor was known to be this very brilliant guy. And he just ripped me apart. Like, he went full on attack mode. And I went home that day and I wondered if I could function. And I spoke with my sister and she said, yeah, I know a bunch of lawyers and I know you plan to go into law. And there's many lawyers have told me that this has happened to them in court many times. You know, what do? You go back and you think about it and you try and think it through and you try and learn from it. But first you got to go through the stages of grief. Like you try and understand it. Sometimes you try and understand it with reference to things that would seem logical. And then you realize that, you know, part of the reason you didn't succeed was illogic on the other side. I look back at that instructor. I mean, he was quite nice to me after that. I think he just wanted to push me. You know, I disagree with a lot of the points that he made now. And I think my points were valid. And I looking back, you know, trying to come to terms with that, I did over time. But of course, you know, we measure ourselves against other people. So that's often a difficult thing. We'd be better off to measure ourselves against ourselves, I think.
Okay. Wise words. Hafiz, how do you get up after being knocked down?
You know, I get by with a little help from my friends and I get high with a little help from my friends. I think you got to find your little community. You got to kind of have that little cathartic letting go of, you know, what happened to you. Find a good friend. Find a family member. I think everyone needs some little bit of support. And just let it out. Find someone that you can talk to. And just speak out what happened to you and your experience. And hopefully that person is smart enough to, you know, be just someone to listen and tell you that, you know what, you're still here. You're alive. You have opportunity in front of you to try something else now. And that's how it starts.
Okay. Sensible. David?
I think how you overcome any failure really ties to the challenge that you were taking on in the first place, what the perceived risk was, and also the perceived reward. So, like, for instance, if you're just playing a card game with a friend and you lose, you're not going to have to be drunk for a year in order to get over it. It's so subjective because everybody comes from a different place, everybody's going to a different place. So if you have a failure along the way, how you overcome it is going to be subjective too. If it's copious amounts of alcohol, other sort of substances, it's all of a matter of getting yourself back into the mindset and the energy and the focus and the drive to take on your next challenge. Like, there's been so many challenges, so many things that I've wanted to accomplish, tried to accomplish, did everything I could in order to accomplish. And some of them I failed and some of them I failed to success. And anytime that I did fail, yeah, it was just a matter of licking your wounds, making a plan and going after it again. Because, I mean, I don't want to make it too cliche, but that's what life is. It's just a series of challenges you make for yourself, challenges that you see, challenges that you want to take on, and rolling with the failures along the way.
Okay. Also good points. Chris Hamilton?
Yeah, I think minus the lyrical quotations that he used, Hafiz nailed his answer exactly how I would. So I'll give you an example. Like, yeah, you gotta get it out there in the open and talk about it with people who are supportive towards you so that we know that our small failures don't amount to us being failures as people, right? And I'll give you an example. So I played recreational softball last year and our team was not expected to even make it far into the playoffs. And we did make it into the final day of the playoffs just by, you know, sheer determination. And in the bottom of the ninth, in the game that we ended up getting knocked out in, we were leading going into the bottom of the ninth, after which game, if we had won it, we would have gone into the finals. And I was playing center field and a ball was hit, fly ball, should have had it. And not only did I not catch it, but it bounced out of my glove and over the fence for the win for the other team.
Ouch.
And the worst feeling ever, right? Because I hung my head and it was a walk-off home run. And I walked into the dugout with my head held low. And just the teammates were supportive enough that, you know, it's not your fault. We weren't even supposed to make it this far. Keep your head up. You know, you had good hits in the game. We probably wouldn't have been leading had you not done those things or whatever, right? So having that peer support is certainly essential to getting over those things. We can't just sit with our shit for too long and let it spin around our minds, or else we'll go insane with it, right?
Okay. And Oliver, you get the last word on this.
Oh yeah, that one, last one was brutal. I thought about teams losing, but being the guy that doesn't catch the ball gotta be extra. What I was gonna say is, I think not rushing into trying to be okay right away is important. I think that sitting and ruminating with those feelings of not succeeding at whatever it may have been is an important part of the process. But eventually, wallowing in self-pity gets kind of boring, at least in my experience, and you start to get some vigor for wanting to live again. And I think that if you look around, there's always lots of examples of people who have been down and out, maybe even at rock bottom, and turned things around, whether it's somebody like Robert Downey Jr., who was in jail and a drug addict who now is freaking Iron Man, or fictional characters for me, like growing up loving Spider-Man. He was always getting his ass kicked and he always got back up again. So I think that's a big part of it, is who do you choose to look for inspiration can be a big factor.
Also good points. All good points this episode. And hopefully people have found some pearls of wisdom in what we're talking about here, because I think we have a very, very juvenile view in North America of what constitutes failure. We take every little setback as failure, when in fact it's just a setback, or it's something that helps to, you know, when somebody's shooting at you and you go down a different route to a route where nobody's shooting at you, you're not a failure for not having gone forward and getting shot. Yeah. And we look at taking steps in other directions often as accepting failure, when it's not. We're accepting that life is not a straight line. And
everyone needs a little more Chumbawamba in their life. You get back down, you get up again, and they're never going to keep you down.
Oh, you can have a whiskey drink and a lager drink.
Yeah, no, well, sometimes you need one of those, some of that.
This was a great show, and then you bring up Chumbawamba.
Come on, I have it on my playlist.
Can we end this podcast with that playing, just like an outro?
No. No, we can't. No, we only
they've got 15 albums, I think.
The only music we end here with is if Chris wants us to end with one of his things, or Paul. That's it.
I would love Chris to make us like an intro track just for us.
I have a song called "Am I Good Enough," and it's dealing with this exact topic too. I think Steven's heard that one.
Yeah, can we close with it?
Absolutely, if you would like. I don't know if you want me to actually rap it or not. Good, I guess.
No, we'll close it with the recorded version.
Cool. Do it.
All right. That will be our closing. So stick around to listen to that, because Chris Hamilton is a very talented musical voice. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I want to thank you out there for listening. David Lisney from out Edmonton way on his hobby farm. Hope you're set up for the winter out there, because as I understand, your winters last quite a while.
Yeah, I'm all nice and cozy. The heater's working and we're buckling down until, you know, April, May, when things thaw out again.
All right.
So thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Paul Doroshenko of Acumen Law in Vancouver, thank you again for being here.
Thanks, everybody. I really enjoyed this.
Chris Hamilton, our MC, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Stephen. I always enjoy this too.
And Oliver George, who's got the podcast Just Chill with Oliver George, which I recommend that you track down and listen to if you're not already listening to it. Thank you, Oliver.
Thanks a lot. If I can just do a quick plug, actually. I finished off last season by interviewing Joey and Snake from Degrassi, Pat Mastriani and Stefan Brogren. But season two is about to start up on December 7th, and I just recorded an episode with your old pal, Rick Campanelli. Yeah, I'm going to be cutting a nice clip of him talking about you and how you were able to get away with a lot more censorship wise because you were a sock.
I love it. Rick is, I think you probably discovered that Rick is as legitimately nice in real life.
Oh my God.
As you always saw. Yeah, as you always saw. And he's got a lot of very interesting insights into the world. I'm looking forward to listening to that. And of course, our producer, Hafiz Noorani. Thank you, Hafiz, for putting together another good show.
This one was a lot of fun. You guys are welcome.
All right. And that's it. This has been Mansplaining on the Fun Network.
It's never good enough for others. It's never good enough for me, even. The song isn't even good. I often ponder my complete discography. Seek the deeper meaning like in Greek mythology. What's represented in the sentences I'm penning, men and women tend to listen. Hope I reach them properly. I'm just a man with a unique psychology. Between good and evil, it's a deep dichotomy. Yeah. because I preach philosophies. That doesn't mean that I believe I'm Socrates. I tend to put my foot in my mouth, and I've done a lot of things that can be seen as being crooked, no doubt. Mom and dad didn't want me, they booted me out. Hated my father, wanted to put my boot in his mouth. Haven't forgotten all the yelling and the violence he put upon me. Confined in my room, crying cause I was lonely. For a new father is what I would wish. And when I wish too loud, he shut me up with his fist. Who up to become a temper tantrum, throw an attention seeker? How'd that happen? I can't comprehend it either. These days I just speak through the speakers, trying to cut up all my problems like some meat with a cleaver. Will it help if I put it in an ill verse? Or will I die inside like a stillbirth? I'm just trying to prove my self-worth, but I guess I gotta prove it to myself first. I'm never good enough for the people in my life. It's never good enough, any speech that I can write. I'm never good enough when I plead into the mic. I know I'm wrong, but sometimes it feels like I'm right. I'm never good enough for the people in my life. It's never good enough, any speech that I can write. I'm never good enough when I plead into the mic. I know I'm wrong, but sometimes it feels like I'm right. Feeling weak and brutal, disgusted with myself and how I seek approval. Shit stinks worse than rubbish heap removal. When as an individual, you let other people rule you. I still show that ill tongue can be a sour cat, chilling in the sour patch of where the damn flowers at. Where the damn flowers at? Gotta take the fucking power back. Hit 'em all like E-Honda with the power slap. At the end of the day, it doesn't even really matter what the other people think anyway. I spent years trying to prove myself to the point that I would lose my health. Not the type of guy that you can help. Must improve myself. Got a lot of paranoia I can do without. Gotta lose it now. Not here to fuck around, the game is on. Screaming like the fucking hound of Game of Thrones. I am my own master, valiant and gallant as Jon Snow the bastard. Free at last, my mind was locked in a cell, prisoner of war on the island of Guadalcanal. There were times I didn't think I could have felt worse. Still think about it sometimes and it still hurts. Yeah, but I ain't gotta prove my self-worth until I prove it to myself first. Am I good enough for the people in my light? Is it good enough, any speech that I can write? Am I good enough when I plead into the mic? Yeah, right now I feel alright. Am I good enough for the people in my life? Is it good enough? Any speech that I can write? Am I good enough when I plead into the mic? Please tell me that it's good enough.